We're beginning to learn Koheles. What I did was I made a sheet over here of the English of the entire chapter, chapter 1, which is double-sided. I also took the liberty of making a few sheets because there's so much. It's such a very rich text that we can really spend hours on one single sentence. My goal is to maybe see two sentences today, if I'm lucky. The reason why I felt Koheles was so special and so important to learn is because not only did I not learn, so many people do not learn Koheles. And the only time that people actually hear it, Ecclesiastes, is in synagogue, if they happen to make it to shul on the middle of Sukkot, exactly, on Shabbat, Chol HaMoed, which means you already had Yom Tov, and maybe you'll make it to Shul, which is the earlier part of davening. And who is the best person to recite Kohelet? The person who can literally fly through it. The one who can say it the fastest, that's the best person you can get. You have someone who's going to go slowly through it, they'll yank him out in the middle. And when I take the stone chumash and I'm looking at the Hebrew and I kind of take a glance at the English with my peripheral vision, I realize how beautiful Koheles really is. And there's so much to it. But unfortunately, most of us are only familiar with one section of Koheles, which we're not going to see anytime soon, which unfortunately did not become famous because of King Solomon, but because of a song by the name of the birds. And it's possible that's the reason why people like to fly through it, based on the name of the band, the birds. They want to fly. Turn, turn, turn. Right, exactly. So, that's unfortunate.
That was the folk singer.
That was before your time.
Well, don't date me. But that's how most people know Koheles. Just that. And maybe you'll hear an explanation as to why it's read on Sukkot. Maybe. There's maybe some connection between Koheles and Sukkot. We're going to see about four or five answers today. There's many, many answers to that question. And as we go through the sentences, we'll become more familiarized with perhaps other interpretations. Now, the author of Koheles, even though it doesn't say it, but you can see in the very first sentence over here, Divrei Kohelet ben David. Kohelet is not only the name of a book, it's the name of a person. It's referring to Hasbi Shlomo. And even though Koheles is a strange name, and we'll see the many interpretations as to the significance of that name, it's clear that it had to have been Shlomo. Because after all, who else was the son of David? David had many children, as is mentioned in the third chapter in Shmuel Bet. But nonetheless, certainly when we're referring to the great scholar, the great brilliant man, it had to be referring to Shlomo HaMelech, the one who was the builder of the first Beit HaMikdash. Not only did Shlomo HaMelech write Kohelet, but he was also the author of Shir HaShirim, known as Song of Songs, as well as Mishlei, also known as Proverbs. Now, what was unique about Shlomo is that he was gifted for his tremendous chachmah, tremendous wisdom. And it's brought down a very fascinating medrash before we begin, just to give a little bit of a backdrop of who this individual was, that it says in the beginning of Malachim Aleph and Kings that Hashem turned to Shlomo at a young age, 12 years old, and he asked him one question. He said, Shoma etenloch, what do you want? Like it's Hanukkah time, you go to a kid, what do you want? They might ask for a horse or a sports car. So what was the thing that Shlomo HaMelech requested? And this is a direct quote from the book of Malachim. He says, "Benosati le'avdecha lev shomea lishpot et amcha lahavin bein tov l'ra." He said, "I want you to give to your servant," speaking very humbly, and he says, "Give my heart the ability to understand, to judge the people, and to be able lahavin bein tov l'ra, to distinguish between what's good and bad. In other words, give me a heart of wisdom. I want to acquire knowledge." And of course, God granted him this request. And it's brought down in this Medrash Koheles Rabbah that if we can liken it to a mushel, to a parable, it would be comparable to a king that would go to a servant and say, I will give you whatever you want. You know I have tremendous wealth. I can give you gold. I can give you a beautiful palace right on the ocean. Whatever you want, it's yours. Just name it. But you can only ask for one thing, and I'll give it to you. So the man thought long and hard, and he decided, you know what? The one thing I want is I want to marry your daughter. I want to marry your daughter. And what's the significance of that? Obviously, once he has the in, right? He's there. He's got the hook. He's all set. And therefore, the nimshal is that instead of just acquiring wealth, which Shlomo was offered by God, I'll give you gold or whatever you want, a palace, he decided for chachma, he decided for wisdom. And that is just like being married. And it's based on one of the most famous psukim in the Torah. Torah siva lanu Moshe, morasha kihilat Yaakov. Morasha, also the Talmud says, comes from the word of erusin, being betrothed, marrying. That the concept of learning Torah is not just an intellectual pursuit, but it's a person who actually has a tremendous intimate relationship with God through his study of the Torah. And therefore, that's what Shlomo wished. And he was, in fact, granted this tremendous wisdom. And God willing, we're going to be learning some of it today. Now, Koheles, for those that just combed through it and we recall, it seems extremely negative, a very negative sefer. We're going to see that really, that's the bad rap that it received. It doesn't really deserve that bad rap. But it's interesting that the Talmud tells us something about the canonization of this particular text. It says in the Gemara in Shabbos, and then after this we'll actually see the first pasuk inside. The Gemara says on Lamed Amud Beis, Omer Yehuda Berei Derav Shmuel Bar Shilat Mishmei Derav, Bikshu Chachamim, the sages of that generation wished, Lignos Sefer Kohelet. They wanted to lock it up, take a big safe deposit box or whatever, and stick this old transcript known as Ecclesiastes in it, and throw away the key so that no one should ever study this text. Basically, the significance of it is that they don't want people to learn from it because there may be something wrong with it. The Talmud says, what was the problem? What is the potential concern? Says the Talmud, nay, shidavarib sosrin zedzeh. Because there are words that will contradict one another. There are certain things which stirot. Contradictions in the psukim. In other words, a person who studies it, and if you learn it superficially, which God willing we will not do, you will maybe walk away with a certain negative feeling about spirituality, about one's religion. And therefore, they were thinking about locking it up. So the Gemara says, so nu, lock it up. What are we doing here? Why are we studying this? Name mal lo ganzu, why was it in fact not in Geniza? Mipnei shetchilaso divrei Torah v'sofo divrei Torah. It's like the famous Chazal quoted about Koheles, that the beginning of it talks about Torah, and the end, the sofo divrei Torah, the end is divrei Torah. And of course, in our source sheets, we don't have the last pasuk, but the very famous last verse that's recited is Sof davar akol nishma es elokim yorev es mitzvosav shamar kizeh kol ha'adam. So at the very end of the day, Shlomo says, after all the hevel havalim of all the vanity and futilities that he discusses and all the terrible things of how he pursues and perceives life, nonetheless, at the very end, he says, Sof davar kol nishma, you have to fear God and observe and adhere to his mitzvot, ki zeh kol ha'adam, this is the purpose of all man. And I believe what the Gemara is coming to tell us is that it's not always how we begin, or even begin, or certainly the center of our lives, but it's really the end. The end is extremely important. And we know this not only, we certainly know this when it comes to Hollywood. A good movie, you want to walk out of the movie, you feel good, right? So the middle was a little bit slow, it dragged, but if it has a great ending, you walk out of there and it becomes a buzz. Everyone starts talking about how great the movie was, even though it probably didn't deserve more than 1.5 stars. But the significance of it is the end. If you have a good ending, then you're all set. And that's really the idea of this whole sefer, that there's tremendous contradictions. But the significance of it is that it's going through life. And throughout our lives, we all struggle. We have different issues And we struggle with our faith. In fact, there was a famous article that some people condemned Mother Teresa, that it says, I think it was in Time magazine, if I recall, that she was struggling with her own faith. And some people looked at it in a negative fashion. But the reality is, it shows that this is something which even someone on her stature, Wahabdil, actually doesn't necessarily accept everything, and everything's hunky-dory and smooth their whole life. There's bumps straight through every single person's road. But the significance is at the end. If you're able to end off on the right note, then it shows that everything else in your life was just your life experiences that got you to that particular point. And therefore, it's something which is acceptable. And therefore, even though they wanted to lock up Koheles, they decided not to do so because of the end. And that's also the idea when it comes to a person throughout life. Maybe a person has sinned, a person's made this mistake and that mistake. And at the very end, the Talmud says that if the moment before a person's passing, you do tshuva, you're forgiven for all of your avonot. All of your sins are forgiven. And the significance of that, again, is that everything up until that point, they were not just negative. That was part of your life experience of learning and struggling to get to that moment in time. But if you're able to get to that moment in time where you actually understand the correct path to take, then, in fact, you ended off on a good note. Ending off on a good note is extremely crucial. And therefore, that's the reason why Koheles was accepted to be canonized as part of our Tanakh, as part of our Torah Shebech Sabah, our written text. With that said, let's see the very first pasuk. And again, if you wish, there are Hebrew sheets, and I underlined some of the things that we'll be seeing today. And again, if you ever have to leave in the middle, it's no problem. We are going to stop exactly at 10:30. It says in the very first sentence, again, I have in Hebrew, you can also look on the first page in English. Dire Koheles ben David Melech Yerushalayim, translated here as the words of Koheles, the son of David, king of Yerushalayim. So how much could there be to talk about on that? Doesn't seem to be a whole lot, that very first sentence. Actually, there is a whole lot to discuss. Starting off with Rashi. Rashi tells us over here, and again, if it's on page 1, I'll try to describe where we are. It's in the middle right column, where there's a Rashi, which is underlined. It says, Dibri Koheles, and if you don't wish to look inside, it's okay, because I'll translate everything as well. Kol makam shnemer divrei eno ela divrei tochachot. That any time you'll find throughout the text of Tanakh, whenever you find the word divrei, the words, those words are not just plain words, but rather they're words of tochacha, of rebuke, of admonition of some sort, of harsh words. So Shlomo begins by saying, this is Divrei Koheles. Starts off, there's no tricks. I'm not pretending that this is going to be fluff and a nice smooth ride. Divrei Koheles, what we are going to be studying, has a direct connection to Musar, has a direct connection to being rebuked. And this is the reason why, if we look on the Sifti Chachamim, which is to the left, adjacent to the Rashi, and the Sifti Chachamim generally is a commentator for Rashi, which kind of explains what was Rashi bothered with. Because sometimes, you know, we read a Rashi, and medieval commentator who was from 1040 to 1105, he sometimes, it looks like he just came out of nowhere, came up with these explanations. The Sifti Chachamim explains what was bothering him to come up with a specific answer. So here the Sifti, that's what we'll be seeing throughout. So the critical way of reading a Rashi is going back to the Pasuk, to the verse, and asking what was bothering him. And that's what the Sifti Chachamim generally does. Dikasha l'Rashi, Rashi was bothered, says the Sifti Chachamim. V'chilo nitnaval Shlomo El Bilvad, was it only these words that Shlomo spoke about? This is the only things that he said. Divrei Koheles, this is the one book that he spoke about. So the Sifti Chacham says that's not true. Balu Shlosha Sfarim Katav. We know that he wrote three books, not just Koheles, but also Shir HaShirim, and also Mishle, as we said. Therefore, the Kaf Kosav Kol Makom Shnemer Divrei, that's why Rashi had to come on to The word divrei doesn't just mean these are his only words. It means these are the words in which are words of rebuke to us. And that's... Yeah, sure, I was...
Shlomo wrote Kohelet, but he's talking himself in like a third person.
He's writing
it, but he is also Kohelet.
He is Kohelet. We're going to discuss in a moment why he calls himself Kohelet. The simple explanation, based on what you said about being talking in third person, sometimes it shows you're a Baal Gaiva, you're a very haughty person. The only people that I know that speak, you're supposed to speak in third person about your Rebbe, your teacher. The only other exception is Elmo. Elmo always says, "Hi, I'm Elmo. Elmo is doing great today."
Yeah,
right? That's haughtiness. That's Baal Gaiva. Here, Kohelet is not even his real name. Kohelet is not his name, which shows his humility. He's an anav. That even though he is the author of a book, can you imagine you spend your whole life writing a book and you say, "Yeah, you know what? I'm not even going to write my name in the book. By, and it's by no one. You just make up a name." Well, some people do that, and everyone knows that this is his name. But that could represent humility. Kohelet also will have many other meanings as well, which we'll be getting to shortly. But just...
I know what you're saying, Rabbi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that Shlomo has three names. Actually, there are some rabbis who say that he had seven names.
Okay.
Yediyah was one of his names, Kohelet and Shlomo. And Kohelet was actually part of his name.
Okay.
I think in Kohelet Rabbah.
Oh, really?
I think so.
Well, okay. Well, in that case, again, we're going to go into Kohelet, the significance of his name, in a few minutes. I just want to hit upon one other thought, which is really not related, but because it mentions the word tochacha, and it happens to be this week's Parshas Vayigash, I want to go off on a very fast tangent for 60 seconds. When it came to Yosef, who reveals himself in this week's Parsha, he says to his brother three words, Ha'od Abichai, is my father still alive? And on this, the Medrash says, Oy lanu miyom hadin, oy lanu miyom hatochacha. Woe is the day of judgment, woe is the day of your rebuke. And on this, the Beit Halevi asked the question, famous Beit Halevi, it's famous once you know it, I guess. The famous Beit Halevi asks, where is the rebuke? Where do we find in our Parsha, which we're going to be reading this Shabbat, that Yosef rebukes his brothers? All he does is say three words, Od Avichai, is my father still alive? So the Beit Halevi explains that when it came to the brothers, they sold him, they justified, we're not going to get into why they did it, but they obviously felt they were right. They must have had some rationalization, some valid excuse in their mind that they did this. But once they saw their brother standing and he asked the question, is my father still alive? They realized the lack of sensitivity and empathy they showed toward their father. And therefore, the tochacha, the rebuke, was in those three words, explains the Beis Halevi, because all your excuses that you wrap yourself around your entire life and you justify your existence, when it comes down after 120 years to your Yom HaDin, you'll realize that in fact they were just invalid excuses. They were worthless. And this is also the idea of Kohelet. That when a person hears Divrei Tochachot, which is what Rashi says these words are, is not just they're going to be harsh rebukes, but rather it's going to maybe give you a different perspective of your life, and therefore all the excuses and rationalizations as Yosef's brothers had will have to unfortunately go away because we will not have what to respond to them. Now let's get into the word Kohelet. We already said the word Kohelet is significant. Just any name that he's humble, that he doesn't write that his name is Shlomo, which is certainly the most common of his names, even though you're right, he does have other names. So you can certainly learn it in that fashion, that it shows his humility. We look at Rashi. Rashi gives another interpretation. Rashi says on page 2, on the top of page 2, you can imagine there's so much to talk about. I underline only a few things, but nonetheless just the what I found to be of the most value, at least to me, which resonated with me. Rashi says, Kohelet al shem shekihel chachmot harbe. The significance of Kohelet comes from the word to gather together. So what was it that Rashi is saying was gathered, that Shlomo gathered together a tremendous amount of wisdom, right? That either that he acquired a tremendous amount of wisdom, which he gathered into his head and placed into this text, or another interpretation of Rashi, which he now says, jumping a line, the Eish Omrim, there are those who say, Shehoye Omer, that there are those who say, Kol, next page, page 3, Kol Devar Behakaha, that everything he said was together as a group, that when it came to these inspirational words, to say it just to himself, to share it, is much more important. As I often quote when I used to be an NCSY advisor in New Haven, they say to keep the faith. And we respond, don't keep the faith, spread it around. And therefore, that's the same thing over here. That when it comes to Koheles, it's not enough that Shlomo was given this unbelievable amount of wisdom, but to keep it to yourself and then just to live with it and unfortunately die without sharing that wisdom, you squandered that tremendous gift that God gave you. And therefore, that's Koheles. Yeah, sure.
Is it possible also that it comes from Vayakhel, since we have it during Sukkot?
Excellent. Very good. That's what? Very good. It's more than possible. You're right on. Because Shlomo happened to be a melech. He happened to be a king. And as the Torah says in Parshat Vayelech, it says that there's a mitzvah of Hakel, specifically on after the Shemitah of the sabbatical year, after the seventh year, B'chag HaSukkot. So it's interesting that Koheles, which means a time in which people gather together, is also the same thing in which the mitzvah during Sukkot, there's always a mitzvah every year, three times a year, the pilgrimage festivals of Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot, but specifically on the holiday of Sukkot, there is a special mitzvah in which the king reads from specific sections in Deuteronomy and Sefer Devarim in front of everyone. And the Torah says, Anoshim, Vanoshim, Vataf, even the little kids screaming, everyone comes together for that particular mitzvah. So it's interesting. So when do we read Koheles? We read Kohelet on Sukkot. And that's the connection. Kohelet, which is Vayakel, the mitzvah of gathering together. That's what the word means. Specifically on Sukkot, by a king. And of course, who wrote this but a king? Shlomo HaMelech. So absolutely, yes. That's another interpretation of the word Koheles. Since we're on the theme of Sukkot, the idea of Koheles, as we're familiar with, which you're going to see, Hevel HaVolim, vanity of vanities, right? That's what Hevel HaVolim, everything is a tremendous lack of focus on the physical world, on the of all the wealth and all the affluence that a person can acquire. Hevel HaVolim, it's worthless. When is it said? When do we read those words? On Sukkot. One of the other names of Sukkot is Chag HaSif. It's a time of our ingathering. And Sukkot is also time of our simcha, Zman Simchatenu. Why is it such a happy time? So if you're a farmer, you're engaged in agriculture, which most of us don't do anymore, except for maybe a little garden in our backyard. But in the good old days, you used to be so happy when you harvested all your food, right? That's why it was Zman Simchatenu. It was such a joyous holiday, just based on the agriculture, the fact that you now have storehouses filled with grain and whatever you were growing. So that's this connection of why Sukkot is called a time of happiness connected to the ground. But, says Shlomo HaMelech, don't let your wealth get to your head. We read specifically on Sukkot, Koheles, Hevel HaVolim. Don't think that the physical, material wealth that you have acquired is so significant. Rather, it is vanity of vanities. So that's another connection, since you brought down, you spoke about Sukkot, of why it's brought down, the significance of why we read this at this particular time as well. Okay, and that's also the idea of a sukkah, a sukkah in general. A sukkah, you leave your beautiful palace, your home, nowadays everyone's house compared to then were palaces, and you go into this little hut where it rains and it's cold, or there's bugs, there's bees flying all over your soup. And the reason for this is, again, Dafka, specifically at a time when you have acquired all of your wealth, that's when we want to stick you into a little hut. So that you should realize, you know, Realize that God is still above you. Don't let all this wealth consume you and control you. That's specifically a time you have to realize, because it's so much easier to acknowledge God when you don't have. When you do have, that's when it's a challenge to acknowledge God. And that's one of the fundamental differences in the way we eat. Well, how is Judaism different than other religions the way we eat? When it comes to other religions, they say grace. They bless before they eat. And then that's it. Right? So their primary focus is before they eat. For us, what do? We'll say a little blessing on a piece of bread, ten words. Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. And then you start eating. Nothing. 1 second. Half a second. When it comes to after we eat, what do? We have a book. Paragraph after paragraph after paragraph. Takes 5 minutes. Who knows how long it can take. So what's the significance of that? That's the point. Because when you're starving, you don't need to remember that God exists. All you need is 10 words. Because you feel the hunger. You feel it. So obviously God is here. I need God. Right? You're suffering. You're in pain. You need. But once your stomach is full and you're satiated, that's when the Torah says, "Echalta v'savata uveirachta." That's specifically the time you have to bench. Because that's the hardest time to recognize God's existence. And therefore, that's the reason over here, going back to Koheles, that why we read Koheles on Sukkot, why we are stuck in this little hut on Sukkot, is because that's the time we have the most wealth. That's the most successful time, agriculturally speaking, so therefore we don't want that to lose our sense of spirituality. And therefore Shlomo tells us, Hevel Havalin, that we should not feel that way. Rather, the material wealth is merely vanity of vanities. If we go back to the Mitzudas Sion over here, then we're going to go to the next words. Mitzudas Sion gives us one more interpretation of the word Koheles. Page 2 in the middle left. Koheles, hu inyan kibbutz vasif, which is what we said before in Rashi, in the Mitzudas Sion, middle left on page 2. Koheles also connotes this idea of gathering together, kamo kehilas Yaakov, v'hamelech Shlomo hi nikrokein shehiko deos, Hadeos Haminagdos. The reason explains the Mitzudas Sion of why he is called this is because there are many deos, many ideas, which, as the Gemara said, that conflict one another, sotim zetzeh, and he was able to somehow weave everything together and put it all together smoothly. So he was able to gather up all of these different things which are apparent contradictions, but as we study Koheles in a critical fashion, we'll realize that in fact it has there are no contradictions whatsoever. So that's what it means, Divrei Koheles. Ben David, the Pasuk says, connecting him to his father, as though to say that Shlomo, by reading this, maybe you think has not necessarily have the same belief systems as David. No, he's Koheles ben David, Melech Birushalayim, and he's the king of Yerushalayim. We look, Rashi, in fact, believe it or not, explains what does it mean that he's a king of Yerushalayim. How hard is that to understand? So if you look on page 3, Rashi says, top right, Melech Yerushalayim, Ir HaChochma. It's a city of wisdom. It's appropriate that a man of wisdom should reign in a king in a country or a city rather of Yerushalayim, which represents Chochma. What's Rashi coming to tell us? What's the significance of that? So again, we look in the Siftei Chacham. Siftei Chachamim says like this, which is immediate. Always, generally speaking, it's right next to Rashi because it's a commentary on Rashi. The Kashul Rashi, because you can ask a question on what Rashi is saying. But Alo Hayim Melch B'chol Yisrael, Shlomo was one of the few kings that ruled the entire world. Right? He was one of the few kings that ruled the entire world. Achashverosh is another one. So, why does the pasuk say Melech Yerushalayim? He wasn't a king of Yerushalayim. Reading, not knowing anything about Shlomo Melech, you would think he was only a king over one city. So Rashi is bothered by those words. What does it mean that he is Melech Yerushalayim? And there, continues to come, Kemo Sheomar B'Sefer Mishlei, as it says in Proverbs, Shlomo ben Melech Yisrael. He was the king of all of Israel. L'chein Pirash Ir HaChachma. That's why Rashi had to understand the words Melech Yerushalayim has to mean more than just the king of Yerushalayim. But it means that he, a man of wisdom, was king over a city which tremendous wisdom came forth from it. Since this sefer, this text, discusses tremendous wisdom, therefore that's why he is connected to a city of wisdom. Rome is hints to the fact, the reason why he was able to receive this wisdom is because not just his own greatness, but also his father, that's why he's called Ben David, and also Yerushalayim, which means that we are not an island. A person cannot take credit for their wisdom or for their talents all by themselves. You have to give the respect and show that your parents are directly connected to this, to your wisdom, to your skills, to your talents, to your success, as well as your upbringing, the environment where you were brought up. Okay, so that's Pasuk Aleph. Let's move on to Pasuk Bet. I promised you we'd see one more Pasuk. It would be wrong for me to go against my word. Okay, Pasuk Bet. We have 6 more minutes. Hevel Havolim Omer Koheles. Hevel Havolim HaKol Havel. Okay. Translated here is, vanity of vanities says Koheles. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Okay, now that Pasuk seems a little redundant. Why on earth does he say this so many times? So we're going to see, starting off in Rashi. Rashi says on page 3, Koheles karatagar v'omer al kol yitziras shivas yimei breishis shibachol hevel shel havolim hu. There's a connection going back to the very creation of the world, which of course we have 7 days of the week. And Rashi is telling us there is a direct relationship between 7 and this pasuk. What's the connection? It says Hevel 7 times in this pasuk. Maybe you should go back to first grade, because it doesn't say it 7 times. Hevel, Havolim, Havolim, that's only 5 times. Ah, but it says Havolim, which is Lashon Rabbim. And therefore, the smallest number in plural is always 2. And therefore, it says this pasuk 7 times the word vanity, corresponding to the whole creation, every single day, everything is Hevel. So that's the significance of why it's not just repetitive. But the point is that there's a connection to the co-creation of the world. Everything in this world is Hevel. And that's the idea of Keneged Shivas Yimei Breishit. Of course, it took God 6 days or 7 days.
What does he want to tell here? That the creation was Hevel?
That life is Hevel. What does it mean by repeating it? And when Rashi says that you compare it to Shivat Yamei Bereshit. It's possible. We're gonna see that the 7 correspond also not just to the 7 days of creation, but also to 7 different stages of a human life. In the Eben Yechiyah, which is on page 4. There's 7 stages. David HaMelech also says that Yemei Shenotenu Shivim Shana, that we live for 70 years. So he could be referring also to each decade of a person's life. All 7 decades of the human life is Hevel, which everything is 7. Nature is 7. Everything that works in Teva is 7. That's why Chanukah is 8. It's L'malo min HaTeva. So we're going to end up seeing that he's not saying that things which are Ruchnis, spiritual, infinite, that certainly is not Hevel. But things which are finite, those things are Hevel. So anything connected to 7, our lives, the world, the physical world around us, all things of nature, it's all considered to be Hevel, because none of these things are going to last. And that's again the Eben Yechiyah, which we won't see inside right now, but he breaks down the 7 stages of life, starting from infancy, or even in utero, going all the way until one's golden years, when a person's a bit older, advanced age. So that's one explanation. Havolim, also some Mefarshim explain, is a breakup of 2 words. If you look at those letters, if you scramble them around, it also means bli ma. Havolim, hey bet lamed yud mem. The same letters, just mixed around, is Bet lamed yud bli, then ma mem hey bli ma, devoid of anything, devoid of any substance. That's what havala means. That there's nothing. It's something which just doesn't last. It's not eternal. Anything that is finite, he considers to be hevel. He considers to be worthless. And some of Farshim say that havolim is not just, he's not just speaking depressed. He's also looking that things in this world are just, even the Beit HaMikdash doesn't last. He looks at the Beit HaMikdash that he built, and he realizes even this, which is connected to Ruchniyat, spirituality, that also will not endure. That also will not last. Unfortunately, it will be destroyed ultimately by Nebuchadnezzar, and thereafter the second Beit HaMikdash by the Romans. So that's another interpretation of what Hevel Havolim means. So one of the last things we'll a lot more to talk about, which we'll get into, is the idea of Omer Koheles. It says Hevel Havolim Omer Koheles. We know that Koheles, that Shlomo said this. Why does it need to say in the same, the Pasuk Bet, the second verse, Hevel Havolim Omer Koheles? We just read in the first sentence that Koheles is the author of this text. Why does that have to say Omer Koheles? And the answer is that if someone who is begging for change, unfortunately, Nebuch, and you go up to them and that person says, Hevel Havolim, all the worldly pleasures of this that we encounter, they're vanity of vanities. So are you going to listen to that person? It means nothing, because that person has never experienced such wealth, such tremendous affluence. But if a Warren Buffett, if a Bill Gates comes up to you and says, Hevel Havolim, that's a chiddush. Because a person who's experienced everything, that's a person who can say Hevel Havolim. And that's the reason why it says Hevel Havolim, Omer Koheles. That Shlomo, who had wealth, he had anything you can imagine, he realizes that this does not have value. But we're going to end up seeing in Pasuk Gimel that the only exception is Torah, things which are spiritual in nature. But anything which is finite is Hevel Havolim. And I'll conclude with this one thought, even though I didn't really finish Pasuk Bet. It says in Parshat Vayigash that when Yosef revealed himself thereafter to his brothers, he gave certain gifts to his father, to Yaakov. He brought a wagon, which had different meaning, but he also gave, as the Torah says, mituv Mitzrayim. He gave from the very best of Egypt. And Rashi points out over there in Chumash, what did he give? He gave his father wine. Give him some wine. And the Torah tells us, Rashi says, that yayin, wine, is something which older people like. Something which older people like. That's what it says. That's what Rashi says. So you can ask, what does that mean? So they like to get drunk. He's an alcoholic. He's saying to his father, you know, why don't you have some Jim Beam or something? Well, what is he trying to tell his father? And the answer is like this, that when Yaakov finds out that his son was alive, he'll be ecstatic, he'll be so happy. But Yaakov was a spiritual man. Yaakov was a very religious man. And he finds out that Yosef is the viceroy, the second in command of the most corrupt society in the world. Oy, oy, oy. Thank God my son's alive. But unfortunately, he is completely devoid of any form of spirituality. What's so significant about wine? Every single thing in this world depreciates. You build a house, it gets weak, older, a car, the book value goes lower and lower. The second you drive it out, as soon as you buy it, it loses value. A year, 2 years, 3 years. Chazal tell us that the only thing that gets better with age is wine. So therefore, what was Yaakov... What?
And women.
Oh, well...
Good for you. We don't feel
I good. Definitely can't argue on that with that. It wouldn't be wise. So what Yosef was telling his father by giving him some wine was, I am not like the people in Egypt. I do not have the finite existence of only trying to care for the physical, for the material, for that which is Hevel Havolim. To me, I consider that worthless. I care about what wine represents, which is spirituality, which grows, which gets better with age. And therefore, that's the reason why Rashi says, The best gift you can give someone who's older is wine. Because you watch Nebuchadnezzar Hollywood, you see, once you're 23 years old, oh, she's too old. You know, she's no longer, you know, she's old goods, right? You don't want her anymore. Let's forget it. So therefore, when a person gets older, you can say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, the good, when I was that age, I was better, things are better. The whole society is geared for the younger generation. It's not true. When it comes to spirituality, when it comes to ruchnias, when it comes to the Torah, we value the older. And therefore, Yaakov is telling this message that I care about ruchnias, I care about spirituality, and the things which are finite, things which are physicals, we'll see in Pasuk Gimel next week, that is Hevel Havol.